The following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Pataka Swami on October 30th, 1988 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 21, Texts 42 through 55.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Dvaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Dvaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Dvaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila Chapter 21 Verse 42 Arta Madhyama Sunagurata Tinavasa Sana Krishna Sastre Kyati Kajar. This is the middle meaning. Now please hear the confidential meaning. Lord Krishna has three places of residence which are well known from revealed scriptures. Antapur Goloka Sivindavan The internal abode is called Golok Vrindavan. It is there that Lord Krishna's personal friends, associates, father and mother live. Madhura Iswarya Madhujya Kripadi Bandar Jogamada Tijaharasadi Lilajas Lilasar. Vrindavan is the storehouse of Krishna's mercy and the sweet opulences of conjugal love. That is where the spiritual energy working as a maidservant exhibits the rasa dance, the quintessence of all pastimes.
Karuna Nikuramba Komale Madurai Swajja Vishesha Shalini Jayati Vajavaja Nandane Nahi Chinta Kunika Pyure Tina.
Vrindavan Dham is very soft due to the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And it is especially opulent due to conjugal love. The transcendental glories of the son of Maharaj Nanda are exhibited here. Under the circumstances, not the least anxiety is awakened within us.
Arthale parabhyo Vishnu lokana Narayanadi ananta sarupedam.
Below the Vrindavan planet is a spiritual sky known as Vishnu Loka. In Vishnu Loka there are innumerable Vaikuntha planets controlled by Narayana and other innumerable expansions of Krishna.
Madhyamavasa Krishna Sharaishwarya Bandar Ananta Sarupe Jaha Korena Vihar.
The spiritual sky which is full in all six opulences is the interim residence of Lord Krishna. It is there that an unlimited number of forms of Krishna enjoy their pastimes.
Ananta Vaikuntha Jaha Bandara Kotori Parishada Ganeshwaraishwaryachi Bori.
Innumerable Vaikuntha planets, which are just like different rooms of a treasure house, are all there filled with all opulence. Those unlimited planets house the Lord's eternal associates, who are also enriched with the six opulences.
Goloka Namni Nijadhani Tale Chatasya Devi Mahesha Haridama Suteshu Teshu Tete Prabhava Nichaya Vihitascha Jena Govinda Hari Purusham Namaharajami Govinda Hari Purusham Namaharajami.
Translation. Below the planet named Goloka Vrindavan are the planets known as Devi Dhamma, Mahesha Dhamma, and Hari Dhamma. These are opulent in different ways. They are managed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the original Lord. I offer my obeisances unto Him. This is a quotation from Brahma Samhita 543.
Pradhana Param Tabhyonar Antari Virojamadi Vedanga Sveda Janitais Toyai Prasravita Subaha.
Between the spiritual and material worlds is a body of water known as the River Viroja. This water is generated from the bodily perspiration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Vedanga. Thus the river flows. This verse and the following verse are from the Padma Purana.
Tasya pare parabhyoma tripadhutam sanataram amritam saswatam nityam anandam paramam padam.
Beyond the river Viroja is the spiritual nature, which is indestructible, eternal, inexhaustible, and unlimited. It is the supreme abode consisting of 3/4 of the Lord's opulences. It is known as Parabhyoma, the spiritual sky. Purport. In the spiritual sky there is neither anxiety nor fear. It is eternally existing and it consists of 3/4 of the Lord's energy. The material world is an exhibition of only 1/4 of the Lord's energy. Therefore it is called Akapada Vibhuti. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered to be the postgraduate study of the Vedic literatures, of the Krishna conscious philosophy. Bhagavad Gita is considered a higher high school course, and one comes up to the point of surrendering to Krishna. The final teaching in the Bhagavad Gita is Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamayakam Saranam Vaja Ahantam Sarva Papi Dho Mokheshami Masajha. Surrender everything unto me, giving up all varieties of duties and religions. Simply surrender unto me. I'll protect you from all the sinful reactions. Of this, have no doubt that surrendering to Krishna is the ultimate instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. Then the Srimad Bhagavatam begins from there, that when someone is surrendered to Krishna, then what is one's duty? Basically, all religions are to give salvation. Some are there that just give moral instruction. They're living in this life, but ultimately salvation is considered to be like a goal. But once you're saved, once you've achieved liberation, then what to do? See, that's a big mystery. Neither they know who is God, nor what to do once you achieve God. What is liberation? So the Srimad Bhagavatam shows a life of different liberated souls. Souls who have achieved liberation through devotional service, illustrating the practice of Krishna consciousness, the activity of serving Krishna after having surrendered to Him, the achievement of love of Krishna, and activities in pure love of Krishna. This is considered the college course, university course. The Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered postgraduate. Here, after already having achieved love for Krishna, or after already understood various aspects about devotional service, then here some very specific details, like here's a description of the different aspects of the spiritual world, given in very great detail for easy understanding. This is even considered to be like a higher level of understanding, although it's one thing follows after the next. So to understand these teachings, therefore one needs a basic background. Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered the most important literature following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because it gives such a clear philosophical, historical, and chronological account of the life and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. In fact, when Srinivasacharya was taking the books from Vrindavan back to Bengal, the Chaitanya Charitamrita had been placed in the bottom. When we opened up the box, we found that Chaitanya Charitamrita was on the top. Consider this as another confirmation that Chaitanya Charitamrita is the topmost. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita is not just someone's opinion. We can see here there are many quotes from the Vedic literatures. In fact, sometimes persons who are less educated in Sanskrit, who just like to read the direct Bengali, they have criticized Krishnadas Kaviraj that you put too much Sanskrit in your book. But to make his book very authoritative, when he would make a point, or Chaitanya would make a point, he would include the quotations that Lord Chaitanya had referred to make it more authentic. Since the Vedas are accepted by everyone, Lord Chaitanya may be accepted by his followers. So to make the teachings of Lord Chaitanya accepted by all followers of the Vedic culture. He gives the different references in the Vedas to support his teachings. It's not that just the Lord Chaitanya said, well, the spiritual world is beyond the material world, and in the spiritual world below Vrindavan is the topmost planet. This is explained by the Vedic literatures. The Lord Chaitanya simply revealed that to his disciples. Since the Vedic literatures are very vast, it's not that everyone knows everything in the Vedas normally, like the Lord Chaitanya did. He's the knower of the Vedas. He's the Vedanta. He's the writer of the Vedas. He's Krishna himself. So he knows everything. Just like when an advocate in court, he may think he knows all the laws, but there may be another advocate who knows the law better. He did his research better, and he knows that in such and such a year, in such and such a court, they made this decision, and this is a reference, I would call it a precedent, and they, by putting that up in the court, the judges are convinced, oh yes, this was a very good logic, and then they rule in favor. The other judge goes, oh, I didn't know it had that. The Vedas are like that, they're so vast, that sometimes there may be some pundit, and he's got his own particular understanding. So, Vedic literature, so everyone cannot know all of the Vedas. So Lord Chaitanya, he and his direct followers have researched the Vedas. Give us the relevant quotations. There are some gurus in India who just make their own speculation, write it down, say follow this. You don't need to refer to the Vedas. Lord Chaitanya, it wasn't his teaching, as last night was mentioned, and in the Vedas it explains, Shruti Smriti Purana Adi Pancharatik Vidhi Bina Aikantik Harir Bhakti Utpatayeva Kalpate. That if you don't follow the injunctions of the Shruti, the Smriti, the Shruti means the Upanishads, four Vedas and Upanishads, Smriti means the Mahabharata and the Puranas and other histories correlated literature, Shruti, Smriti, Purana, well, it specifically mentions Puranas also, Purana Adi, and other literatures in pursuance of those literatures. Pancharatik, the rules given by Narada Muni in the Pancharatik system for worshipping Krishna. Vidhi, rules, dina, without. Aikantik Hari Bhakti, pure devotional service to Lord Krishna, Hari. Utpat, disturbance, aiva, kalpate. If you don't follow the authorized scriptures, it creates a disturbance to practice the pure devotion. So sometimes they do this, unauthorized people, they just create their own ideas. But Lord Chaitanya, being the maker of the Vedas, the knower of the Vedas, the whole goal of the Vedas, he always refers to the Vedas. He's not giving something independent of the Vedas. He's giving the real essence or real purpose of the Vedas. But this was so essential that some of the scholars, they may have not really picked it up, may not have understood. In India, the system is that when two scholars meet, they discuss in accordance with the Vedas. And whoever can give the substantiate his philosophy with quotations from the Vedas is considered to be the victor in a discussion. He's considered to be the authority. It is a system, Veda Pramana. Not that people just speak, well, I think, really, well, I think this, well. What about that? It's not a question of opinion. Prabhupada once said, if somebody says something, well, I think, it means that what they're about to say is not. Because it's not what one thinks, it's what Krishna said. It's what the Shastras said. So, here we have from the Brahma Samhita that there's Goloka Vrindavan. And below Goloka Vrindavan, there are these other dhams, Devi, Mahesha, and Vaikuntha, or Haridham. So, a scenario has been given of four different levels. The material world, the world of Lord Shiva, the world of Vaikuntha, and the topmost in Vaikuntha planet, Golok Vrindavan. This Golok Vrindavan is the ultimate shelter of the living entities, because that's where Lord Krishna resides. The river Viroja is in between the material and the spiritual worlds. It's like the boundary. So to go back to the spiritual world, we have to cross the river Viroja. Some people say the river Viroja is what the is also Nirvana for the Buddhists, but they don't go beyond to the spiritual world. Although since the Buddhists don't directly refer to the Vedas, it's not that easy to exactly identify what they're realizing. So which aspect, but they're realizing some form of unmanifested material energy. So in the work by Sanatana Goswami, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he explains how a living entity goes in progresses back to home, back to Godhead in the spiritual world, going through the different planetary systems. Of course, one could go directly back to Krishna, but sometimes one may go also step by step. So he traces out the journeys of a particular soul who goes up level by level through the different planetary systems, and that each level in the material world is that pure bhakti is transcendental, but when devotional service is mixed with karma, it's on one level. When it's mixed with jnana, it's on a higher level. When finally it's more pure and pure, finally when it's totally pure, you go out of the material world. And then where it's practically no bhakti at all, that's in the lower planetary system, but it's just karma or just jnana. And when more and more bhakti is being added, that means that the planetary levels go higher. Or like you have planets of some demigods where they have the desire to be comfortable, but they also have devotion for Krishna, for Vishnu. That's why they're demigods. So there you have karma mixed with bhakti. Karma means the desire for fruitive results. Bhakti, of course, is pure devotion. You have the devotion mixed with fruitive desire. Then you have other planets where they're more into mystic powers and realization. You have more jnana mixed with bhakti. Sometimes you have a mixture, karma, jnana mixture. So he explains in reference to these three mixtures how you get varieties of planetary systems. Finally, you go to Brahmaloka, the highest planet in the material universe. And normally Brahma, he doesn't leave the universe until the end of his life. He's also like a prisoner in his own creation. There's a difference between Brahma and Vishnu. Vishnu can make the whole material world. He can stay or he can go. Krishna doesn't have to stay. But Brahma, when he makes a universe, he's more or less stuck with it. But the pure devotee, they can go back to the spiritual world even while Brahma is still here. So that's why a pure devotee going back to the spiritual world is worshipable even by Lord Brahma. So it showed how the soul left the material world and went to the planets of Maheshadam, Lord Shiva's abode. And how there they were performing meditation and austerity, they were more peaceful. And they had almost like liberation. It was very close to liberation. In a sense, they were liberated from aspects of material suffering because they were out of the material universe. At the same time, it wasn't exactly like being completely liberated in the spiritual world. It was some unique kind of middle position. So then he decided to go to the spiritual world on the advice of Lord Shiva. So he headed off across the river Virocha, and he was going to the ocean of the Brahma Jyoti. And then as he was going, he started to see that he was merging. Like he's maybe just hesitated for a minute or thought, what's it like to be in the Brahma Jyoti? And then he started to merge. Hare Krishna! He was in the Vaikuntha Loka. Otherwise, he said, phew, that was close. You know? Almost merged. For the devotees, merging is like, phew. Very fearful. That was the most scary thing he ever had encountered. Almost merging, losing his individuality, cognizance or not, perception of his own individuality. Then he was there in the Parabhyam, the spiritual sky. So here in the different verses, it explains aspects about this from the different Vedic literatures. That the whole material world is akapada vibhuti. That's also an important point. It's only 1/4 of the Lord's total opulence. 3/4 is in the spiritual world. The material world is a small fraction. It is also that Lord's external abode. He has an external abode and he has his supreme abode. The difference, the supreme abode is always eternally existing. But the temporary material world is sometimes manifested and sometimes unmanifested. Krishna wants to go out for a vacation in the material world and give the living entities a on them there a chance to get back. He manifests it and then he comes in. Sometimes he just leaves it dormant for a while. This is explained here. Tartole bhacho vas viro chara paak aranta brahmanna jaha kotori apaak. On the other side of the river Virocha is the external abode. which is full of unlimited universes, each containing unlimited atmospheres.
Devi dhama namo tarthi jajabashi jagalakmi raki rohe jahamaya dasi.
The abode of the external energy is called Devi Dharma, and its inhabitants are conditioned souls. It is there that the material energy Durga resides with many opulent maidservants.
Devi Dharma Namota Jivo Jarvashi Jagalaki Raki Rohe Jahamaya Dasi.
Purport. Jagat Lucky. Because he wants to enjoy the material energy, the conditioned soul is allowed to reside in Devi Dharma, the external energy where the goddess Durga carries out the orders of the Supreme Lord as his maidservant. The material energy is called Jaga Lakshmi because she protects the bewildered conditioned souls. The goddess Durga is therefore known as the mother. Lord Shiva, her husband, is known as the father. Lord Shiva and goddess Durga are therefore known as the material father and mother. Goddess Durga is so named because this material world is like a big fort where the conditioned soul is placed under her care. For material facilities, the conditioned soul tries to please the goddess Durga, and Mother Durga supplies all kinds of material facilities. Because of this, the conditioned souls are allured and do not wish to leave the external energy. Consequently, they are continuously making plans to live here peacefully and happily, such as the material world. So when we're away from Krishna, Mother Durga is a babysitter. So we call the babysitter as mother also, out of respect. And to keep the kids happy, she gives them a lot of toys. So we're happy to be in the playpen. And we think, well, I want to stay here forever. This is great. It's better to be in the infantile garden, the nursery school, than be back home with more toys here. But the human form of life is meant to grow up, to be able to realize that we have another higher existence. We should grow out of the kindergarten school or the nursery school and go back home, back to Godhead, where we belong. Engage him directly in our service to Krishna. At that time, you don't need to stay with the babysitter, Durga. So, of course, Durga is a bit, it's not always, this playpen is a bit heavy duty. Because it's birth, death, old age, disease, and we have to take the karmas from what we do. So although we think that this is very enjoyable, often we're forced to cry because we suffer in the material world. Krishna, when we cry, Krishna, we want to be delivered, when we have a desire to get out of the suffering, then Krishna provides us the means. Etin dhame hoi krishne krishna adisho goloka parabhyama prakriti par. Krishna is the supreme proprietor of all dhammas, including Goloka, Vaikuntha, and Devi Dhamma. The parabhyama Golok dhamma are beyond Devi Dhamma, this material world. Purport. When a living entity is liberated from Devi Dhamma, but does not know of the opulence of Hari Dhamma, he is placed in Mahesha Dham, which is between the other two Dhams. The liberated soul does not get an opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. Therefore, all of this Mahesha Dham is Lord Shiva's Dham, and above Devi Dham, it is not the spiritual world. The spiritual world begins with Hari Dham, or Vaikuntha Loka. So, the different descriptions here of the different spiritual universes. Someone gets liberated from the material world but doesn't know anything about Krishna, doesn't want to merge, gets up to Maheshdam, where he's out of the material repetition of suffering. At the same time, he's not really in connection directly with Krishna. It's a rare kind of situation. It's not considered a full liberation, so it's usually not even discussed, but there's this circumstance that someone may achieve. Being either in the material world or in the spiritual world, being in between, Maheshana. For the devotee, they know clearly what all the different possibilities are. They know who they are, they know who Krishna is. So then they fix their mind with their intelligence. But alright, let me go back to home, back to Godhead, let me serve Krishna purely in devotional service. And when something's not favorable to devotional service, the devotee rejects it. When it's favorable to devotional service, they accept it. So, to be able to advance quickly, we have to know what's favorable and what's unfavorable to devotional service. Otherwise, what's a neophyte? Neophyte means the person doesn't really know what's good for them. They don't know what's good, they don't know what's bad. So sometimes they think, oh, this is nice, let me do this. But it's really bad for them. Even though they might have a good intention, they may think this is going to make me happy or this is all right, why not? But actually what they want to do is something totally inauspicious for their spiritual advance. This is a basic problem of the neophyte, is that even though they may be well-meaning, they make mistakes because they don't know properly. But they may be a little puffed up or proud, and they may think that, well, I know. They don't know. All these are symptoms of the neophyte. And then when they're feeling some misery, or they're feeling some anxiety, or they're in difficulty, then they wonder, why is it happening to me? And then they go to some spiritual authority, they go to the spiritual master, and then they find out, well, what am I supposed to do? So when one is a neophyte, they should actually be very humble. Of course, one should always be humble. But especially as a neophyte, one has to be very much dependent on the guidance, moment by moment, of the guru and the guru's representative, so that we don't make mistakes. Like Bharat Maharaj, he was advanced in one sense of his realization, but in an experience. He didn't have that much knowledge, so he got entangled with the deer just due to lack of experience. Someone may be very sincere, they may be very enthusiastic. Everything may be said for them to really advance back to home, back to Godhead very quickly. But due to lack of experience, due to lack of proper care, they can make a little mistake and get tied up for a long time. Therefore, one always serves under the shelter of a spiritual master. Unless one knows for sure, if one's in doubt, what to do, what not to do, you don't make the decision just that, well, I think, let me do this. So let me find out. If you don't know, then don't risk it. Is this ice thin or not? I wonder. Ah, it looks alright. Boom! If you don't know, then don't step on the thin ice. You find out that, oh, it's thin. You fall in like the whales that got stuck up in the ice, right? They didn't have a proper guru telling them where to swim. They had to get saved. So, you don't want to get stuck up in the icebergs of the material world by making some foolish mistake. So we don't take unnecessary risk, we don't speculate. What is not speculating? Not speculating means that we don't know really what to do or what not to do, but we think, well, let me do this. Without knowing for sure that it's authorized by the guru, by the scriptures, by the previous acharyas, the sadhus, we do it anyway. That's whimsical. And usually what happens is because devotional service is beyond speculate, usually the thing what to do is something we never think of. If we're not experienced and we just do something because we think it seems good, usually we're wrong. Because devotion and service runs in a totally different rules. Spiritual world doesn't run by the way that things run in the material world. So we try to figure something out materially. What we think makes sense in spiritual life falls flat on its face. Therefore we need to relearn, we have to learn or relearn what we forgot about the spiritual world, about spiritual life. And therefore we don't take any risks, unnecessary risks, about doing something we don't know if it's authorized. Sometimes devotees take the risk of preaching because they know that Krishna wants this conditioned soul should be saved. Let me try to preach to this soul, even though there's a risk that may become offensive or they may not accept. They try to carefully explain Krishna consciousness. If I can save this soul, Krishna will be very good. That's a calculated risk. Knowing that it's an authorized activity, but if the person turns out to be really envious and unreceptive, all right, better not, because then what's the use of telling something about Krishna, the person turns around and starts offending. It's bad for their spiritual progress, and thus it's bad for us. So, the devotee learns the science of Krishna consciousness so that they can know what to do, what not to do. To accept what's favorable for Krishna consciousness, you have to know what's favorable. If someone knows that this is favorable for my Krishna consciousness and still they reject it, that means they're in Maya. That means that they rejected Krishna. If I know this is pleasing to Krishna, this is pleasing to the Guru, this is going to help my Krishna consciousness, still I reject it. That means that we've surrendered to acting for our own sense gratification. So that type of prayer offering me help. They're not sincere, even if they try to play that, well, I don't know. Just like Prabhupada gives the example, you can wake up a person who's sleeping, but you can't wake up someone who's asleep, who's awake, pretending he's asleep. Somebody already knows it's 4 o'clock, it's time to get up, but they put their head under the cover and then they say, well, I'm asleep, you know. Even how much they poke them, you know, they won't wake up. But they're already awake. They're just pretending. So this is a problem that devotional, well, this is the fact that devotional service is totally lost. If someone wants to practice, they'll practice. It's their own free will. And practicing means to know what is the difference between what is favorable and what's unfavorable for devotional service. And that's a continual learning process, because as we advance, we find newer situations, so then there's newer evidences from the scripture, new applications. But the principles are one. Therefore, nectar of devotion gives us first many principles. So we can know what is favorable. Worshipping Tulasi is favorable. Taking the shelter of a spiritual master's favor is a basic principle. Taking initiation, taking instruction, following the instruction, associating with devotees, avoiding the association of materialistic people who are not interested in spiritual life. There's so many different principles given, so we can understand, right, this is favorable, this is unfavorable. So I find a bona fide spiritual master, let me take shelter. Once I take shelter, I serve under the guru. And then I don't just go here and there. If I have some question, I consult with the spiritual master. Then when I'm convinced that spiritual master is giving me the proper instruction, he's helping me, then I take initiation. Then after that, he gives instruction or orders. Then I have to follow those orders. And they're not different than Krishna. Like this, we go on our spiritual life. Then I find that this person is a Mayavadi, or this person's actually just speculating, or this person's not, whatever, something that's not exactly right on. Then we all better back off from it. That sensitivity, that dedication to accepting what's favorable and rejecting what's unfavorable. It seems like a very simple thing, only it's accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable. But it's such an important aspect of surrender that it goes throughout our devotional service without fail. Because it also implies you have to know what's favorable, what's not. If we don't know whether should I do this or not, is this really favorable for me? Then we go and ask the senior Vaishnava. If our Guru is present, we ask the Guru. Otherwise, we ask senior Vaishnava. The sadhus, hear from the lives of Acharyas, the teaching to the Veda. Someone replies according to Vedic evidence. Yeah, this is favorable, no, this is unfavorable. And if we understand, oh yeah, this is unfavorable, still if we want to do it, that's simply being whimsical. I mean, then we actually back off a little bit from surrender. So pure devotional service is anya vilasita sunyam jnana karma anavritam, to be free from other desires, including the desire for fruitive work and for liberation and independent knowledge. Anukulena, a favorable Krishna Anusilana. We follow Krishna in a favorable way. So I'm serving Krishna and I'm going to serve him like this, whether he likes it or not. Whether the whole world, everyone say it's not the way to serve Krishna. I don't care, I'm going to do it this way. It's not very favorable. Someone's sick and then I say, please give me a little soup and a little dry japati or something. And then we say, no, I'm going to give you a big feast. I'm going to cook you lasagna and barat and halva, you know. But I'm sick, I got hepatitis. I don't care, I'm going to serve you, you know, opulently. You know, you want to kill me? And Prabhupada said, the Guru asked for a glass of water, and he said, no, I'm going to give you milk. But I want water. But milk is better, take milk. Is that certain? It's like it's an expression of our own ego. It's not favorable, it's not pure devotional service. If it's devotional service, it's mixed with some motive, material nature. It's not pure. Pure devotional service means anukulena. Anusila, we follow and we serve in a favorable way. There are great acharyas, of course. Great acharyas. They are so much in touch with Krishna that they could directly understand from Krishna in the heart. And from the Vedas, everything, I realized the Vedas, they were in touch with Krishna, they would know what to do. Every situation. Therefore, they're great acharyas. But even in the ISKCON, where Prabhupada is authorized, alright, the different devotees can accept disciples, train the disciples, responsible for the disciples, accept worship from the disciples, etc., etc. But still, he said, for the management of the entire world, which is a very big responsibility, he didn't put that responsibility, and that's something maybe that individual has to do and can do. Because that's the whole system of Guru Parampara, to take individual responsibility for disciple to disciple to serve. surrender to the Diksha Guru and take Shiksha also under certain circumstances. Take other Shiksha needed. But for being responsible for the entire movement, Prabhupada said, no, I want a governing body. He said, one person, it's so complex managing a worldwide Krishna conscious movement. And material energy is so complicated that one person could get confused. There's too great a risk. It would risk the whole preaching to put everything under one person. So we have a governing body. So if someone actually comes up to a level of being an acharya, a great preacher who's been connected, that primo rise to the top on his own. That will be, doesn't mean it has to be officially that one person is in charge of the whole movement. He didn't want that. The Bhakti Siddhanta Saritaka wants to do it. There must be no time. So I'm just using this as an example in this particular context. There were even a spiritual master who was not given that much authority to consider himself as some kind of an independent acharya over the entire movement. Although when some people took it upon themselves, later they faced problems. But similar, how much then an individual devotee, who maybe not up to the level yet or up to that maturity to be able to be a spiritual master in charge of many other people's lives, spiritual progress, he's only or she's only responsible for their own spiritual life or life of their family, if they're grihasthas. How can they put themselves in the position that they're the absolute acharya for their own spiritual life? And whatever they decide, whether the shastras condone it, whether the gurus permitted it, whether the shiksha gurus permitted it, whether senior Vaishnavas have advised it, you can do it anyway. Hell with them. Practically, the person putting himself up as the acharya, at least for his own life, if not for the world. And that's exactly what Prabhupada advised against. We should always be in the service attitude. We should always verify some. We should be very sure. We shouldn't take unnecessary risks. Of course, for brahmacharis or unmarried matajis, they're in the temple. Generally, they're maybe a little more humble sometimes being in the ashram situation. As soon as the brahmacharis get married, and then they have, well, I am responsible for my family. Matajis become mothers in the real sense and having children. Naturally, the economic needs are there, but then also with that, they take advantage of the little independence they get. Whatever independence they take. It's a license, and alright, now I can just do whatever I think. Actually, what they're doing is they're playing into Maya's hands. Even if one wants to live as a Vaishya, wants to live as a Kshatriya, wants to live in a different situation, one can never exist without strictly following the instructions of the spiritual master and expect to be always safe. As soon as we put ourselves that I'm the Acharya for my life, I'm not following my Acharya, my Guru, my spiritual master, then Maya can have a heyday on it. Because she's more powerful, and we become bewildered, and we end up serving Krishna not as an anusilana, not follow. We're no longer as anusila means follow, and anukula means favorable. So if someone's not following, how can it be favorable? And even if one says, well, I'm following, but they don't do it in a proper way, they don't do it in a favorable way. So the both aspects are there, following and doing it favorably. So Prabhupada explained that this human body is like a boat. We can cross over the ocean of material energy. We need the association of the Vaishnavas. They're like the favorable wind. Ever try to cross the ocean in the middle of a hurricane? Less than desirable. But even big ships, they are afraid of being caught in a hurricane. But they can sink. If the whole atmosphere is disturbed enough and one's in a materialistic association, not associating with the devotees, associating with people who are speculators or who are materialistic or who are impersonalist or who are just something on the wrong track, it can be such a disturbance to our own concentration we can even sink and go back into the material ocean. Therefore, it's so important to have favorable association with the Vaishnavas. Then we also need a guide how to get across the ocean. Otherwise, again, the ocean is so vast, if you don't know how to see the stars and if you don't have a proper captain, you could end up going around in a circle, never reach the shore. So every ship has a qualified captain. He knows how to steer by the sun and the stars and by the different signs of nature, whatever, I mean, in a ship. So similarly, Guru, he knows how to steer according to what? The reference points. What are the reference points? His disciplic succession, what he learned from his Guru. the Vedic literature, the lives of great devotees and acharyas, the example they've given for us to follow. These are the reference points. Just like a captain in the ocean, he sees that this is the North Pole, this is the sun, and they have their instruments, and then on the basis of that, they can say, all right, this is due east. Similarly, the captain of the spiritual ship, the spiritual master, he doesn't guide by just sticking his finger in the air and feeling the wind, which is always changing. But he uses those things which don't change. The absolute truth, the Vedas, Sadhu Shastra Guru, and he guides across the ocean. It's not even optional. It's not like, hey, you can cross the ocean, you need a captain, just go out there in the ocean. You know. A bunch of kids go out in the ocean with some ship. They're bound to get in trouble. It's not children's play. The devotee, even a very advanced devotee, even a devotee like Bharat Maharaj, who had ecstasy, he had bhava, he was crying for Krishna. But because he didn't act under the proper guidance, he ended up taking 3 more births, coming as back as a deer and everything. A little bit of carelessness, a little bit of independence may cause us in the next life to become who knows what. Why risk it? We can never be without a guru. If we're without a guru, that means we're in a hopeless position. We have to always accept spiritual guidance of spiritual man. If for some reason our spiritual master is not able to guide us, we have to accept someone as a Shiksha Guru, with that Guru's permission, if he's present. We have to have some spiritual guidance, otherwise how are we going to proceed? We have to, not that necessarily, we may have, alright, someone chalks out the map and says, you go up to this point, as long as we can follow the chalked out map, we're safe. But if we get to a situation where no longer the map tells us, well, I didn't got to this cross, where to go, now I don't know where to turn. Let's see, where to go? Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Tic-tac-toe. All right. Not like that. You don't just risk it. Well, I don't know where to turn now. I better... First, let's see if I ask the spiritual master, ask the representatives, ask senior godbrothers. You know, if the guru said anything in this situation, what's the best thing to do? Oh, yeah. He said to the so-and-so, you should do like this. A similar thing happened to him. Oh, really? All right. Okay, then I'll do that. Oh, we don't. I never heard of that situation. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, but I think, Prabhu, you know, it's all right. Really? Why do you think that? Well, I think that way. Got feeling I have. Well, thank you, Prabhu. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He says, I think, well, I think it's all right to do it like that. This I think business is where we get in real trouble. We want to hear, what does the Shastra say? What do the Vedas say? What does the previous Acharya say? What is the spiritual master? Can't be a spiritual master if he starts saying, well, I think it's all right. On the basis of what? Thinking on the basis of Vedic Pramana, Vedic evidence. So in this way, when we always know where we're going, we don't need to have any doubt. We don't have anything. We're in Vaikuntha even while we're in this world. Why? Because we don't have any doubt, no anxiety. We know I'm going back to home, back to God, and I'm on the right path. I'm protected, I'm situated under the shelter of Guru and Krishna. And as soon as we start doing something which isn't authorized, we're in anxiety. Why? Because we don't know where we're headed. We're going driving from the city of Dallas out to the airport, and then there's a sense, go left, go right. It says you can go to the South Airport or the North Airport. It didn't say what airlines are in the South Airport, what airlines are in the North. It said, which way to go? South, North. Let's go South. Turned out it was the wrong way. The airline Delta was in the North Airport or whatever. It was like, whatever one we picked, it was the wrong one. We had a 50-50 chance. But then, sometimes there's no choice. You have to pick one or another. You're going on the freeway. It doesn't give any... But spiritual life isn't like that. It's not that there's no... list. It very clearly says, and if we don't know it, we should know that the spiritual master knows. And if the spiritual master doesn't know, he knows where to find out. So that we always know this is the way to go. This is our safe course. So actually that's why what is so wonderful about Krishna consciousness is that it's very scientific, it's very systematic, and it's complete. There are questions that are left unanswered. There are not doubts that are just left. There's not a situation where you have to just speculate what to do. That is crucial to one's Krishna consciousness. For preaching, alright, preaching, you have to use your intellect according to time, place, and circumstance. Whether for this is better to do Harinam loudly or softly, or you know, whether to sell big books or small books or whatever. The preaching is there. There's plenty of room for using the intellect to create for preaching. But the general program of preaching is authorized. What things are we can preach with, what paraphernalia or what rather, things like what type of books are authorized, what type of... These are very clear. So maybe what, okay, today where we go to, which place to preach or in which way, what particular mantra, what particular phrase I'll use to try to encourage this person to engage in Krishna service. There's plenty of room for using the intellect. It's not that people are everything slow. Just really the particular direction, the general category is approved. And there are certain guidelines that we apply. So devotee is called Buddhi Yoga, Yoga of Intelligence, because we're given the guidelines. And we have to apply those in the different situations we come to. When we come to a situation, we don't know the guidelines. Then we find out, what's the guideline on this situation? What's the instruction? So I can apply it. One has a little bit different situation they come up to, but it fits within certain categories. The circumstances may be different, but the categories of the basic situation is not. And we have to know that. We have to learn that. So that we can do that which is favorable to Krishna and reject that which is not. Because we know if it's favorable for Krishna, it's favorable for me. Because I am part of Krishna, I'm Krishna's servant. What's ever going to be favorable for him is favorable for me. If it's not favorable to Krishna, it's certainly not going to be favorable for me. And when we think that what's favorable for me, even if it's unfavorable for Krishna, or we think that what's unfavorable to Krishna is favorable to me, that means we're in maya. That means now we're separate from Krishna. We've separated ourselves. Because what's ever not favorable to Krishna is definitely maya. It's in the material world. Prabhupada explained that if one gets out of the material world but doesn't know about the spiritual world, he can end up in Maheshadam. We had Bhagavad-gita, he wasn't really planning to go to Maheshadam. He kind of just left the material world, left Satya Loka. But he didn't really have the objective of leaving, of going to the spiritual world directly, so then he ended up in Maheshadam. So he could get there under some rare circumstances. By just having the proper consciousness that was suited being in that place, according to the definitions given. Once you're there, then Lord Shiva, he directs one to go back to Godhead if they have a desire to serve. See, this particular soul had a desire to serve Krishna, but he wasn't desiring to serve Krishna exactly at that time. He somehow desired in such a way that he ended up in Maheshadam. Then it works the other way also. From Maheshadam, one can also fall back down in the material world. Even from the Brahmajyoti. Because Lord Shiva, one approaches Lord Shiva as a guru. If one approaches Lord Shiva for getting instruction about Krishna, it develops information about Krishna, about the spiritual world, and develops a desire to go to the spiritual world, then they can go back to the spiritual world. But actually, you're just a little spirit soul in the middle of this body made of the material energy, and because of your willing, the body acts in that way. Actually, it's being done through the material energy. Krishna allows you to control your body. So you're a little controller. In the spiritual, you don't have a body. You directly serve Krishna. But here, you have a body. You can control the body. But actually, the control is just given to you. But the actual body is moving according to your desires, according to the material energy. Actually, the material energy is what it's doing. So Brahma, he is willing to create like this. When he wills, and he has a particular formula, but then actually the what's making it happen is the material energy. The material energy is in a higher subtle level. So like Krishna is the first creator, he creates all the material ingredients. And Brahma is the second creator, he takes the ingredients and he puts them together. So you can't build a house unless somebody makes bricks. So the first creator is the one who makes the bricks, and the second one is the one who... The contractor takes the bricks and makes the house. But the bricks themselves, you don't have a house unless you have the bricks. So the material nature, Durga, is the ingredient for the entire. So actually she's cooperating with the will of Krishna or with the will of the Brahma and allowing the creation. So those who had a higher vision, they can see that actually it's the material nature. From one point of view, depending on what level you're looking at. From one point of view, it's the material nature that's creating. Because she's even influencing Lord Brahma, because she's in charge of the three modes of nature. And she's giving the mode of passion also to Brahma. So Durga is even above Brahma. There are many Brahmas, but there's say one Durga. So in a higher sense, she's inspiring Brahma to create through the mode of passion. So that's why then you get people who worship, they see, well, material energy is really supreme because it appears that she's inspiring everyone through the three modes in different ways, and she's doing, but it's a higher level. Their viewpoint is a much more subtle level than the gross phenomenal. They see that behind the scenes, even behind Brahma, is the material energy. But the point is, they don't see that behind the material energy is Krishna. This is Chayam Eva. She acts like a shadow, according to the Ijanarupa, according to the desire of Krishna. Just as our body acts according to our desire by the agency of the material energy, but she acts according to the desire of Krishna automatically, although she is independent in her own, as an independent entity. She simply carries out the desire of Krishna. It's not that she's independent, but she's like a puppet with the strings. You don't see the strings on her, because she's just acting according to Krishna's desire. Where at us, we can almost see the strings of the three modes of nature pulling us around. If we analyze, we can see that when we're not in Krishna consciousness, that we're being pulled by the strings of the material nature. By passion, by ignorance, by goodness. When we have a proper philosophical viewpoint, we can see that, yeah, I'm being affected by these modes. Whether you're Brahma, whether you're little Indra, whether you're a little Indra bug, Indra Gopa bug. Of course, there are Shaktas, they think that Durga is higher than Shiva. But in a general sense, I mean, anyway, she only works under the potency of Krishna. She only works under his desire. So she's not independent. And since Shiva is the expansion of Krishna, although their situation is much more, she's much more independent of Lord Shiva than she is independent of Krishna. She's totally dependent on Krishna. And officially she's working under Shiva, but sometimes she shows a little bit of independence, you know. And it's apparent independence. Ultimately she's under Shiva's control, but not to the extent that she is always under Krishna's control. Any questions? If you learn the science enough from your spiritual master while he's present, then those instructions may be enough to carry you right to the... If you learn all the instructions from the spiritual master, then you may not ever need to have another Shiksha Guru. In the beginning, Prabhupada thought that people are very Krishna conscious, then they can transcend all the different... Like in Vedic, there's a whole science on how to check for compatibility through different symptoms. There's actually people, it's their profession, is to analyze the compatibility of a prospective match. And they check through personality, through their activities, through their likes and dislikes, through their astrological chart, through their age and their physical appearances, and so many different things. It's like actually a whole science, you know? Even to the point of the length of their fingers and different signs of the body. And then people, actually, that's their entire occupation, is their professional matchmaker. It's not just like, you know, something really... Actually, it's like a science, it's an art or something, where they... Or scientific, actually, where they actually are able to judge them. But Prabhupada, he assumed that the differences in material compatibility were not so important. If people are fully surrendered to Krishna, then they could transcend all that. Because even in trying to make a compatibility, you hardly ever come up with more than 70%. If you get 50%, you're doing good, usually. That's what I heard from astrologers. It's hard to get more than 50% compatibility. If they can get together 50% of the time, they're doing pretty good. It's only like Lakshmi and Narayan are 100% compatible. Radha and Krishna. So what happened is that when Prabhupada, you can't know what the spiritual master thinks actually. But what he did say was he assumed that they had a
more surrender. He had a surrender they could transcend it. But in practice, they didn't surrender. In practice, once they got into the marriage situation, they didn't really stay that Krishna conscious. And therefore, when they could have surrendered, they could have overcome their material incompatibility by being Krishna conscious. But instead of being fully Krishna conscious by being a little bit in Maya, then it wasn't compatible, and so the marriage broke up in some cases. And then Prabhupada, after that, he said, no more, I don't want any more involvement in this marriage business because it's not working out. And since that time, there's been time where Prabhupada didn't get married first by legal, they can be courting system. Somebody did, I don't know if he authorized that, but I know that he authorized they could be married legally and later on by fire sacrifice. So many different situations. And so now it's not like that, there may be what, a range if someone wants to get married, so rather than go around and kind of just like talk with all the brahmacharis or talk with all, you know, they ask the authorities, could you please find out who's eligible, and then, you know, try to, and ultimately they're told to associate for some time. And it's not any, that it's arranged marriage. You associate for 6 months. Why do you think the authorities say to associate? They don't know whether it's compatible or not. They want you to figure it out. Because we don't know the Vedic science on this compatibility that expertly. And we don't know how surrendered people are going to be when they actually get married, whether they're really going to surrender. If they really surrender, it doesn't really matter. I know Indian women who are like really into the tradition of whatever, they suffer like anything with their husband. But they never think about separating. They figure this one life, let's go through it. And I know American women or Western women, they're just not going to tolerate it. If it just doesn't work out, forget it. And you know, who's to say which is right and which is wrong? It's a different situation, it's a different culture. So ultimately Prabhupada said, and I've obviously, for social organization, in one sense, it works out better if there's no divorce. But then you know, the Americans would say, well look at it, if the woman's not happy, then why should she have to tolerate it? Because they're more, you know, so anyway, we don't even get into that. We just understand there's a different background, a different culture. And therefore we had some, I mean, I would just like to say as a message to all unmarried Matajis, that when you have your period of, you know, getting to know, don't think that because the authorities have authorized you can associate, therefore it means that you've been ordered, you have to get married, even if you think it doesn't going to work out. Later on when it doesn't work out, you say it was arranged marriage and it's all their fault. Because a real arranged marriage, they don't even see each other before they get married. You ask Krishna, I know in India, they see for 5 minutes. They're brought together and they talk for 5 or 10 minutes. What do you think? And they look and then, how are you, nice to meet you? And then, that's it. Even Mukunda, how much he met his wife before they were married? A few minutes only. That's an arranged marriage. Not the way it's done here in the West, where 6 months or a year they court with each other, they discuss with each other. You know, it's not... It's not, this is like a real, you know, westernized version. It's not like, so people shouldn't take it. If you don't think it's going to work out, then don't do it. So maybe in the future we get really expert people who can test the compatibility. I know that Atmatattva is swamped every year during the festival. People come up, you know, it's just compatible. Different astrologies that, you know, I know that Kripalpa wasn't wrong. If you're really surrendered, you know, it could work. Just by completely taking shelter in Krishna, it could work. And it's just like one thing that, alright, it's just like a kind of internal sannyas maybe for the married people that this is just like material life is like this, so now let me totally surrender to Krishna and just officially do it. Even in that old families, an aristocratic family, it's like that. How a king and a queen get married, later it doesn't work, they get divorced, the whole kingdom will be thrown in chaos. They just, you know, they live in their separate bedrooms and they do their own thing. You know, officially they appear together, but inside they may hate each other. You know, I mean, that's just like, that's the aristocratic kind of way things go on. You know? Here people want here and now, you know, and have their cake and eat it too. In fact, even they did a study, they say that most marriages they have problems. And most marriages they even decide that, you know, probably they would be divorced if they didn't have kids. But they figure that for the sake of the children and the family, they just tolerate. At one point or another, they thought, let's just break it up, it's like hopeless. But because they have a family, because they have some religious obligation, it's usually because of religion or because of family, because of some commitment, they stick it out. But if it's just for the sense, you know, like
being totally compatible, and they said like 10% of all marriages fit in that category. They really thought, yeah, always we were friends, it worked out, we never thought about it. It's not that, you know, material life itself has already got like a planned obsolescence. It's already planned to be three miseries of material nature. It's very easy to do. It may be someone arranged a marriage and didn't work out. But I think right now we're very cautious not to do that. And even in spite of associating and in spite of everything, still sometimes there's problems. And Atma Tattva said, even if astrologically everything, things work out, sometimes you get a situation where someone advances more in Krishna consciousness, which isn't in the astrological chart. And then when you try to compare that with the other person, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter, because the other person is more or less surrendered. One's more surrendered, so therefore there's an incompatibility just due to one's more surrendered. One is more eager to be pure devotee of Krishna and doesn't mind being a little detached. The other one, he wants or she wants more of a material reciprocation and more a little, you know, it's less Krishna consciousness, more material gratification because of the incompatibility of their dedication. One wants to, let's go to Arati, or the other one says, well, why don't we go for a walk, or, you know. So then it doesn't work out. So he says, it's very hard, even if you match it up by astrology and by qualities and everything, if one person's a little bit in Maya and the other one's very Krishna conscious, you're also going to have a disagreement. So then hopefully if people are Krishna conscious enough, it'll work out. They would see, this is the more Krishna conscious thing, let's go listen to the lecture, it's better than going for a walk. Guru's there, alright. Okay, we have to end here, otherwise... Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhara Sivananda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.